Welcome, Freedomizers and guests. If you're listening live, it's 6 p.m. Pacific time on January 15th, 2012. It's on freedomizerradio.com. I'm Tiger Lily, show host for Tiger Lily's Freedom Roar, and my show is next. Grab a snack and get settled in to listen to my show, Tiger Lily's Freedom Roar, on freedomizerradio.com. At the bottom of the hour, my special guest will be Teresa Smith. 3 years ago, her son was executed by Orange County cops. Here's how lamestream media first reported this tragic story.
Following breaking stories, an officer-involved shooting in front of a Walmart store in Anaheim. The police were apparently undercover at the time. Eyewitness News reporter Sid Garcia is there live. Sid, what can you tell us?
Right now, there is still an investigation going on here. It's at the other end of the parking lot here. We're at the Walmart on Euclid at the 5 Freeway. The store remains open. Holiday shoppers making their way inside as Anaheim PD detectives continue their investigation. Let me show you what it looked like earlier this afternoon. The call came down about 3:20 this afternoon. Here's what we know from Anaheim PD. They got word that a parolee or a former parolee in that vehicle, you see that where the center of attention is, had a gun or was armed. The four undercover officers followed the parolee into the parking lot here at the Walmart, and then that's when gunfire was exchanged between the suspect and the four undercover officers. The suspect was hit, taken to UCI Medical Center, where he is listed in critical condition. The one thing police are still trying to figure out is what prompted the shooting.
As to what led up to the shooting, we do not specifically know, but I can tell you right now that the man was armed. We have recovered a handgun there at the vehicle. So he's been transported to a local hospital. It appears he's in critical condition. Now we're just waiting detectives so we can get more information as to what led up and why did this person engage officers or confront them with a handgun and why was he armed in the first place.
Now again, Anaheim PD telling us at ABC 7 Eyewitness News that it was the suspect that started shooting at the officers. The officers then fired back. Again, the suspect, UCI Medical Center, in critical condition. The investigation is ongoing. The Walmart remains open as shoppers continue to make their way inside. Reporting live from Anaheim, Sid Garcia, ABC 7 Eyewitness News.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are heroic in my view. My heart goes out to what you have gone through the past, how many years has it been since your son was killed by cops?
2 years and 1 month.
Every Sunday. Tell my audience what you've been doing.
I've been out there every Sunday protesting, every Sunday, rain or shine.
Teresa, I just listened to that the very first time I listened to it,
Me too.
From the history and from the research that I have done in my own community, and that is just, that whole story is full of holes. I mean, it's full of holes, and you're here to plug those holes for us today. Let's start with this 10-second clip of what was said on that.
They got word that a parolee or a former parolee in that vehicle, you see that where the center of attention is, had a gun or was armed.
Okay, that's the first thing that hit me. First of all, why do they have to identify the person as anything? It's a human being. Whether it's a parolee, why would, do we have to know if it was a black person? Why do we need to know if it was a black person that was a veteran that was honorably discharged versus dishonorably discharged? Why is that relevant in the media? And what are your thoughts on that?
I feel exactly the same way. Giving him a name of an ex-parolee or a parolee or a black or a Hispanic or, like you said, a veteran or a homeless person. You know what? My son was a human being. And he had children. You know, he was married. He was a human being. I don't understand, and I've never understood why they do that to people.
And they control the message. They're you know, the media goes immediately to the cops and they want to know what happened, and they control the message, and what they say is not the truth, and you can believe a grain of what they're saying, because when it all washes out, you're going to find out it wasn't what the way that they want you to perceive, because, you know, we're just the media just throws stuff at us, and we sheeple are absorbing it and saying, oh, well, you know, a parolee, okay, well, you know, somebody
that to die.
There you
That's
go.
People see, you know, it. People think, you know, I you know, when it was on the newspaper and on, you know, I read the articles a couple of weeks after he died. I didn't do it right away, but I read the articles, and I read a few comments. My attorney, my family said, please don't read the comments. But I read them, you know, I read a few, and I thought, okay, you don't even know my son, and you're making these comments because you're right. The media have portrayed him, and, you know, of course the police, oh, you know, we follow him because he's an ex-parolee, and of course the media has to hype that up. He's an ex-parolee. He had a gun. Okay, so we're going to shoot him.
Right.
When they justify it in that sense. That's the first thing they do in the media. Okay, this is why we did it, because they've been in jail. They were drug addicts. You know, they were drunk. They want to always smut everybody up to justify what they do.
Right, Teresa. Tell us what was his situation. I mean, I heard what you told me, and I did some more follow up reading, and it appears that your son was convicted on a drug charge. Is that correct? But then he pled to something lower and served a little bit of time, and then, you know, he was on good behavior and he had never been in trouble before, and all of that. Which, my point being, that we are creating a society of criminals by criminalizing drugs. I mean, everyone can get drugs, but you have to have a master's permission. It could be a doctor's permission slip, or if you want to, you know, if you're really desperate, you're going to resort to street drugs. And to do that, you're taking your life into your own hands, because to get caught, you're going to, you know, like my brother, when he was 22 years old, he got caught selling in a sting operation, and it was during Bush 1's time, where he had this war on drugs, and he had to serve a minimum mandatory sentence of 4 years. And he came out of that prison hardened. And so we're creating a society.
They think when they put him in prison with other people that are, I don't want to say real criminals, but people who have actually really done some horrible things. You know, if they've been in there for, like you said, for drugs, or for even, maybe a DUI or for stealing, and then they put him in there with hardened criminals who are actual killers and rapists and molesters, and they learn how to live a different life. They become animals in there. That's exactly what they become. They become animals when they're in there. They have to live that life. Then they come out into society, and we want them to live in a cage, locked up, and then set them out on the streets and say, okay, now live a normal life.
Right.
It doesn't happen that way. They don't give them any transition to move back into society. They give them a lot of time away from society, and you're supposed to come out after doing, like you said, 4 years, 5 years, 2 years. And say, okay, now you have to come out like a normal person, have a normal life. No, they have to go through a transition. I worked in a halfway house, so I know exactly what I'm saying. And it was a transitional house. And these are people who did federal time that were in there for 5 years, 15 years. I had a guy who couldn't even barbecue a hot dog because he hadn't even been there a barbecue in 17 years. And yet we expected him to come out and find a job in 2 weeks, you know, and go back into society and do everything right. It doesn't work that way. And like I said, they want to talk, you know, they've talked about my son, you know, he was a gang member, and, you know, he had tattoos and he had a bald head, and, you know, they want to keep up this stuff. But the fact remains is that you still shot him and you killed him. We have due process in this country. He wasn't even given that. He wasn't given anything. They didn't even ask him anything.
You're
you know.
Innocent until proven guilty, and they shot him before he can be proven guilty, so therefore he died an innocent person. Teresa, here in the Las Vegas area, we have a Sheriff Gillespie. I call him Gestapo Gillespie because he's anti-gun rights, and he's always covering up. And here in Las Vegas, his Gillespie trained dogs, Gestapo trained dogs, have murdered 12 people just in the last in 2011. And
wow.
One of the cases was Trevon Cole, who was a black man who it was a botched raid. It was the wrong house, and they executed him while he was kneeling in front of the toilet trying to dump a little bit of marijuana that he had. And listen to what Gillespie says about that case.
If Trevon Cole and occupants of that apartment would have done what the officers had asked them to do, Trevon Cole would be alive today.
Yes, we're not.
So it's
but
his fault he got
slaves.
Shot, right?
Yes, thank you. We're nothing but a bunch of slaves. If he had just done what the police had asked. Excuse me, the police don't ever ask anything.
No, they don't.
They demand. They think they are God. My gosh. Okay, and we had another, the most recent shooting that got a lot of outrage. It was because he was a disabled military honorably discharged veteran who had psychological problems, and he was executed in his car by, you know, another case of failure of communication. Listen to what the family says about
well, injustice, and that's how she describes his death, Dave. But the title of today's message at Stanley Gibson's funeral was The Innocence of a Sacrifice. Friends and strangers honored the Gulf War veteran's life, but they want justice for what they say was a wrongful death.
And we'll go back into your son's case. Let's go into what he said, what they reported about the parolee, the gunfire that was exchanged.
The four undercover officers followed the parolee into the parking lot here at the Walmart, and then that's when gunfire was exchanged between the suspect and the four undercover officers.
Tell us about that.
Okay. I know that that's what Sid Garcia reported, but in all the newspaper articles that we had here, the Sergeant Garcia said they didn't even know if he had fired back at them, but they had fired at him, is what they said. All the articles that I printed up and that I have all said that they don't even know if he shot at them. Now, Sid Garcia says, yeah, they had this wild shootout. First off, they didn't even know if Caesar had a gun. They didn't know if he had shot back, but they did specifically say, and this is the Anaheim police, said they shot at him. I know they shot at him, and I know they shot him from behind because I saw his body. They said they took him to the hospital. I know they did not because he was shot twice through the head and once through the heart. So I know he died right there. And yet they sent us to the hospital where they made us sit for, I don't know, 2-3 hours before they said, they wouldn't give us any answers. They wouldn't tell us anything. They said that we had to wait. I don't know, maybe 2-3 hours later, they said, okay, we want to talk to you. I didn't want to talk to them. I wanted to know where my son was because that's where they told me he was. The police took me into a room, me and my daughter, and they're like, well, we need to question you. And I said, no, you don't. You're not going to question me. I'm going to question you. Where's my son? And they didn't want to answer me. They kept, you know, going around, well, we need to ask you questions. And I'm like, no, I'm not going to answer your questions. So one of the police officers got a little crazy with me, and the district attorney finally said, you know what, you need to tell this woman what she needs, what you need to tell this woman what she's asking you. This is what I'm here for. So finally she said, you know, I looked at him and I said, where's my son? And that's when they told me that he was dead. And I said, well, then I want to see him. And they said, well, he's not here. He's already at the morgue. I'm like, what do you mean he's at the morgue? You know, by this time I'm like going crazy. I just can't even believe that he's gone. My daughter arrived a little while after, and she said that she talked to the head nurse at the hospital. And the head nurse said, I don't know why they keep sending the family members here. He was never here. I know he was never there. When I saw his body, he couldn't have lived with 2 shots to the head and 1 through the heart. But it was their ploy to get us away from the scene. And these are the things that they do. They did the same thing to Julian Alexander. There was a black kid where they shot him twice in the chest. They were following somebody else. He came out to see what was going on, and he had a broomstick. They shot him. They told the mother to go to the hospital. She got there. They made her wait. Then they questioned her. And then they told her 2 hours, 3 hours later that her son was dead and that he was at the morgue. They never let her see the body. 2 months ago, they killed another boy. They did exactly, this is their MO. They tell you that they're at the hospital. They make you wait there for 2 or 3 hours, and then they say, oh, well, they're not here. We've already taken them to the morgue. Well, why would you take them? Yeah, you took them to the morgue because you killed them right on the spot. You don't even give these people a chance. You know, they're shooting people here in the back, and they're saying, oh, they had their hands in their waistband. And then they find out later, I know at least 2 or 3 people that they've killed didn't even have a weapon. So this is, they've got an excuse. They justify everything they do. Everything they do.
With lies. With lies. When all else fails, they will lie and cover up with more lies. Here's one of the reported lies.
The suspect was hit, taken to UCI Medical Center where he is listed in critical condition.
Yeah, right. He was dead. He was shot dead.
Yes, he was.
Oh, my
yes,
God.
Yes, he was. And I tried to contact the Garcia. You know, I emailed him a couple of times. I tried calling the station, and I'm like, you know what? You covered the story when it happened. Why didn't you follow up and get the truth or at least, you know, talk to the family? I said, but you know what? They don't. They just want to make everything look so bad. You know, this terrible person got killed, and they deserved it. And this is just the way it is, you know. They kill somebody, they justify it, and then, like I said, the way they make him seem like, oh, they were a criminal, oh, he's been in jail. You know, just because they've been in jail I don't care if they've been in jail. It doesn't give them the right to shoot somebody in the back. It doesn't give them the right to kill somebody. They're supposed to arrest them. They're supposed to take them to court. They're supposed to be able to prove their innocence. They're not giving people a chance to do anything. Police have now become police, judge, jury, executioners. That's what they do.
And that's what people need to wake up to. Unfortunately, there are too many people like you, Teresa, that are waking up in a. It's like worse than just getting a bucket of cold water thrown on you. I mean, but there are so many people who continue to enable this behavior because they lap up the media bias. Oh, it was a parolee. Oh, it was a homeless person. Oh, it was, you know, this, we had a case here in Las Vegas, a young man, 21 years old or 23, I don't remember. He had a butcher knife and he allegedly refused to let go of his butcher knife. So they executed him right there on the street. I mean, you got 4 cops with one guy with a butcher knife and you can't disable him without killing him. I mean, please. I mean, what about the
trained to do that? They're supposed to be trained to do that. You know, they're supposed to defuse a situation. I think, you know, they've got things twisted. You're supposed to defuse a situation, not make it worse. And that's all they know how to do. That's all they know how to do. They shoot somebody and they're like, oh, well, you know, I feared for my life. How do you fear for your life if somebody's got their back to you? I don't understand that. And it's because it's not just my son. It's been several other people. You know, we've had an incident here. 2 people have been shot because they had a water hose nozzle in their hand.
Oh, I remember one of those cases.
Yeah.
And they thought it was
It happened in Huntington Beach and it happened in L.A. And it's, they've always got a reason to do these things. I don't understand it. It's just like I said, I continue to protest and I will until we do get justice. And if it takes the rest of my life, then I'll do it. And I'll fight it, and I'll fight it, and if they deny me, I'll appeal it, and I'll appeal, and I'll keep doing what I need to do until somebody is held accountable for murdering my son.
I admire your tenacity. There is another man here. His son was Eric Scott, and he was West Point graduate, and he's one of my heroes as well because he's suing, and I know you're suing as well, but he's relentless. That's what drives him and people like you to wake up the next day to seek justice for something that is probably will never be vindicated. So let's listen to the next little clip about how the cop responds to the media.
The one thing police are still trying to figure out is what prompted the shooting.
As to what led up to the shooting, we do not specifically know, but I can tell you right now that the man was armed. We have recovered a handgun there at the vehicle. So,
Yeah, what about that gun? Did you ever know your son to have a gun?
No. No. No.
So at this point, with all of the lies that you've witnessed, with all of the runaround and all of the stuff that you've encountered, would you put it past the police department to have planted a gun on him?
I really, honestly, I don't think I would put anything past him. Because my understanding when it originally happened is that they didn't even find a gun. And then as stories went on, then they found a gun in the back of the Suburban. Then they found a gun in the middle of the Suburban. And then they found the gun in the front seat. And then the original story I heard was that he was in Walmart running around with a gun. And then he mm-hmm. went outside and got in his car. And then, like I said, then I saw this art clip with Sid Garcia that there was a wild shootout. And, I mean, I heard so many different stories. I heard so many different stories. It was, and until I saw his body, I like I said, I didn't know what had happened. But once I saw his body, I knew that they executed my son. I mean, there was just nothing else. There's nothing else
right.
they can tell me different. There's nothing. I don't care how they want to justify it. I don't care how they want to smut my son up, my family, you know, what he did before, what he did after. That day, at that moment, they killed him.
He was a victim.
They killed him.
Yep. Yes.
And that's
they
all that matters. It doesn't matter what he did before. It doesn't matter what he was or who he was. It doesn't, none of that matters. He was a human being. He was a son. A father, a husband, a brother, an uncle, a cousin. People loved him. He was an actual human being, and yet you want to make it sound like, oh, he was a dog. You know, you give more dogs rights than you give human beings today.
Yes.
Whales get more rights than human beings do today. I don't understand. I don't understand it.
Listen to the cop and his assumptions that he makes in this case.
He's been transported to a local hospital. It appears he's in critical condition. Now we're just waiting detectives so we can get more information as to what led up and why did this person engage officers or confront them with a handgun, and why was he armed in the first place?
What a load of crap.
Right. If you read the articles, the reason they followed him is because they had a phone call from a confidential informant.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's saying he doesn't know why, and yet in every other article, as soon as it happened, that is exactly what they said, that they followed him because they had a phone call. Okay, you get a phone call that, even if you've got a phone call, it's not cause to kill somebody in the manner in which they killed my son. Like I said, once again, it's like, it's not just my son, it's all these people, you know, all these young men that are getting killed, and they're not even given a chance to do anything, to say anything. It's like, okay, we'll just shoot first and ask questions later. What are you going to ask them when they're dead? What are you going to ask them?
Let me ask you this, Teresa. In Eric Scott's case, who the West Point graduate here in Las Vegas who was gunned down at Costco, there was a lot of controversy over where was the Costco surveillance videos.
Exactly.
They've disappeared. What about Walmart? Was there any surveillance in Walmart?
Knowing my son, because he had been harassed quite often because of his appearance, mm-hmm. he knew his rights. So I know he went into Walmart because there are cameras. There's several cameras in the parking lot. And I know him because even when he would get stopped prior to that, he would pull to the side, but he would always park where there was a light because he knew his rights and he was very careful. So I knew when he pulled into Walmart, he was pulling in there because he wanted to be where those cameras are. Now, I know for fact, that Walmart has the best surveillance cameras in the nation because they are so big. And when I worked in the criminal justice system, I had a gentleman who was in there because of a Walmart surveillance, you know, tape. Well, mm-hmm. the surveillance tapes evidently that we have, I don't know. I haven't seen them, but, you know, I've heard that you can't see anything, okay? I don't believe that. I don't believe that because I know that they do have a very good security system. I know that. I know for a fact.
Right.
And
you feel so helpless.
That they're not visible. Okay, why aren't they visible? If they've got the best security, why can't you see anything?
Mm-hmm. These dogs are just out of line. I know that when I was videotaping my son getting arrested, I showed up just to make sure that he wasn't going to be harmed by some rogue cop because I know he was carrying a gun, lawfully carrying a gun, and it was in the city of North Las Vegas. Because I wouldn't leave, I was charged with obstruction, and the cop yanked the camera out of my hand, and 24 hours after spending 24 hours in a holding tank, I got my belongings, and my recording was completely erased. So I know my camera was recording. I've operated that camera for 2 years, and I know it was recording, and I know it was wiped clean. And that's what they do. That's why I have no respect for that profession whatsoever. Let's hear this next 9-second clip and see if we can talk about it.
Now, again, Anaheim PD telling us at ABC7 Eyewitness News that it was the suspect that started shooting at the officers. The officers then fired back.
And that's what people need to realize, Teresa, that what the media is reporting is what the cops are telling them. And
exactly.
Cops lie. They lie all the time. Where is this George Carlin thing about the cops lying? I have it right here. Oh, God.
Yeah, I don't understand how they said this to him, and yet in all the articles that I've ever read, it was clearly stated that they did not know if he shot back at him. And yet, in Sid Garcia's, telling about what was going on, he says, yes, that he did. Like I said, I was really upset with Sid Garcia because him as a journalist should have followed up. Okay, you got your story wrong. Why didn't you correct it? But he didn't,
right.
And he wouldn't respond to me at all. He just never responded to me. Like I said, I sent him several emails. He never responded. To me, a journalist is supposed to report the truth. Well, why aren't they? Or get the facts before you report them, this is what you were told, but okay, it came out that they didn't know if he fired. Why didn't he follow up and say, a correction, he didn't fire at them. They shot at him. They don't even know if he shot back. He never corrected that. So
right.
Like I said, it really upsets me. I will never get over that they took his life. He left behind 5 boys that are traumatized to this day. To this day, the baby was 3 years old when he died, and to this day, he is still afraid of police. Every time he sees a police car or a police, he literally trembles so bad. We have to hold him until he calms down because he's been out there protesting with us. And when we were protesting, if they would come out of the building, he would run to me and just tremble. And he'd be like, Grandma, Grandma, because he's afraid that they're going to shoot him.
Oh, my gosh.
He was 3 years old. He's 3 years
That's
old.
Tragic.
And every time if he hears a siren, we have to hold him because he's scared of sirens. He's just, and he wasn't even there. But he's 3 years old, and he knows what's happened. And his other sons, his other boys are like, they are so traumatized. They are devastated. Their dad was their whole world. And now 5 boys have to grow up without their father.
Wow.
And for them to think that, it's okay, we do this. You didn't just kill him. You killed a part of our lives. We're a very tight-knit family. We're a very close family. We always did a lot of things together. I mean, me and I have 4 children. And, they all have kids, and we'd always get together, for barbecues, to watch a movie, for a birthday party, for all the holidays. These holidays have been the saddest thing in the world. My son is not here.
Yeah.
His kids are not here. We don't celebrate. We don't get together anymore because that part of us is missing.
Right.
I once wrote, a little thing, and I said, is a police, because when a police officer dies, oh, my God, they make the biggest thing out of it. Oh, my God, he fell. That's what but this is your job. You took this job. So you're taking this job knowing that you're in danger. This is what you're doing, okay? So if you get killed, yes, I feel bad for you and your family. Not for you, you're gone, but for your family. And they think that their life is more important than ours. It's not.
I
agree.
Know,
the way their family is affected, other families are affected. You know,
right.
Their life is not more important than a citizen's life. Life is important, period. So when a human
Absolutely.
Being takes away another human being's life, they should be held accountable. I'm sorry, but I've said it, and I will say it till the day I die. Police are not above the law.
Absolutely not. And thank you for getting this message out to my listeners. We're at the top of the hour, Teresa. I have to go to a commercial break for a little bit. So if you would be so kind as to just stand by, we'll have another 20 minutes or so to close things off. When we come back, I want to recap a little bit and talk about what you're doing now and what you're observing from other families that are in your predicament. Okay?
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So stand by. I'm going to give you George Carlin and then a couple of commercials.
Okay.
Swearing to God doesn't mean anything. Swearing on the Bible doesn't mean anything. You know why? Because Bible or no Bible, God or no God, if it suits their purposes, people are going to lie in court. The police do it all the time. All the time. Yes, they do. It's part of their job to protect, to serve, and to commit perjury whenever it supports the state's case. Swearing on the Bible is just one more way of controlling people and keeping them in line, and it's one more thing that holds us back as a species.
Our biggest threat is the police state. It is horrific what is going on. Teresa, you were when I talked to you initially, you were telling me that you have reached out to other family members of similar victims. Tell my audience about that.
Well, I do post a lot of things that I'm doing on Facebook and, you know, what I'm doing. I protest every week, so I put it on Facebook. I've had other families that I guess have seen it. So they have been calling me, messaging me, you know, getting a hold of me, giving me their story, telling me what's going on with them. And I've had people call me from up north, you know, Northern California, Los Angeles, you know, we're all talking about eventually getting together. You know, we all do this individually for our family. But my long-term goal in all of this, because, yes, I do originally do this for my son here in Orange County, but my goal is that eventually we can all together as families, you know, all of our families get together. Because that's what it's going to take. It's going to take all of us uniting and saying, okay, this is enough. You can't continue to take our loved ones away and not be held accountable.
Exactly. There was a pretty cool idea that I saw on a Facebook page. It was a victim of I don't know if you know him or of him, Reggie Doucet or Doucet.
Somebody posted that on my Facebook. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, what they suggested was yesterday was the 1 year anniversary of the killing. So the advocate said, how about everybody who objects to this killing, the way he was killed, and, you know, how about changing your Facebook picture to his picture for 24 hours? So I did that, and I thought that's a pretty cool idea. We should, you know, have an awareness day to memorialize all of the victims of our police state. Did you hear about that idea?
Yes, I did. Yes, and actually, somebody posted it. Somebody from another family had told me about this, and I said, okay, I can do it. The only thing is I was gone all day yesterday. I was not home, so I can't do it for my phone. But I've done it for other families. You know, they're like, okay, this is what we call it is their angelversary. You know. So, well, that's what I call it. It's their angelversary. I just don't, it's hard for me to say it any other way. It's just too heartbreaking to know that this is your anniversary of the death of your child or your loved one. So I think it's easier when you say angelversary. You just kind of, not everybody believes in that, but that's what I do. Anyway,
that's a good idea.
I do share people's stories on Facebook, on my son's page. I share everything. I sign petitions. I've asked people to help me sign our petition. Unfortunately, I found out through a journalist that, you know, of course they justified the killing of my son over a year ago, and I didn't even know about it until almost, what, a year and a half that I find out later that they had said, okay, what they did was okay, that they were justified. So although I had a petition going on, I now have to rewrite that petition to appeal the district attorney's decision. So now I've got to redo that again. I'm also trying to put together a nonprofit called LEAN, which stands for Law Enforcement Accountability Network. And that is to help families that are going through this. You know, there's a lot of stuff that you go through when this happens. You don't even know where to turn. You don't know what to do. I've done a lot of research on things that need to be done to help other families. I'd like to help other families to, you know, sometimes just give them an insight of what they need to do, because here in Orange County, when somebody gets killed, I don't know, I guess my name is out there now, so people call me, hey, you know, somebody just got shot. And I'm like, okay, we'll have their family call me. Some do, some don't, you know, and if they do call me and if they ask me for advice, I do help them. I tell them, look, you can do this, you can do that. They fall apart, of course, and with, you know, getting the funeral arrangements together. Some people don't have the money. They need to do fundraisers. I'm also starting a grief support, you know, because like I said, it's when you're grieving like this, you don't even know how to do things. I have been researching how to write a petition, how to write to the congressman, how to start a nonprofit, you know. I've had to research all these things so that I can do this. And I do this all in honor of my son. But like I said, my long-term goal is to get other families together so that we can, I don't think anything can be done unless all of us unite. Because all just doing it individually, nothing's being done. But if we all unite and start making some noise, they're going to have to listen.
Well, Teresa, it's interesting you say that, because there is a certain unsettledness that I'm feeling in the air in the U.S. Perhaps it's more prevalent in the bigger cities like Las Vegas and Los Angeles and that sort of thing. But are you familiar with NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act?
No, I'm not.
But
I will look into it.
Well, you really should, because it is the most vile piece of legislation that since the Patriot Act. It's worse than the Patriot Act. Basically, now the government, by executive order, can the president, just on the mere accusation that you're in bed with an enemy, like say an Al-Qaeda person or something, or you're harboring or aiding and abetting, just the mere accusation gives the president of the United States the authority to get his dogs and kidnap you in the night and take you to Guantanamo Bay, torture you, and execute you without any civilian, military, a judge, a jury. I mean, we're already seeing this happen, play out on cases like your son's. But now it's in writing. And interestingly, there are a few people who are awake and have been keeping track of this, and mainstream media does not cover it. That's why we rely on shows like freedomizerradio.com, that we're not sellouts to any industry. We're here speaking the truth, exposing things. And surely enough, I decided since it's Nevada is an open carry state, I open carried on the strip on New Year's Eve. But before I left, I got online to see, you know, to Google NDAA, National Defense Authorization Act. And sure enough, the president from Hawaii in secret, signed that bill. And of course, he made a statement that he'll never use it. Well, excuse me, if you'll never use it, why would you need to sign it? So
exactly.
This people are waking up to this. The police state is a very serious threat to our freedoms. And here is what, I don't know if you're familiar with Alex Jones. A lot of people have thought of him as a nut job, because and a conspiracy theorist and everything. But he has some very captivating film that he's caught, and people, you know,
even 2 years ago, people could have told me something, some of these things that I know now, and I would have been suspicious, you know, and the bikers that I hang out with, you know, I would,
right.
they would tell me all of these stories about their violation, being violated by cops. And in my heart, I thought, well, it's not that I didn't believe them, but I was self-righteous in the sense that I thought, well, you know, you got tattoos, your hair is long. I mean, you look kind of like a criminal. So you're kind of asking to be violated,
exactly.
you know?
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
So, and that is where most people are, I think,
uh-huh.
in that mindset. And it wasn't until I put on a tiny little helmet and I had my first encounter with a police officer that it was really, really ugly. And when I filed my complaint and everything, amazingly, the dash cam video was missing. Now, you can bet your butt
yeah.
that if it would have been somebody that shot at a cop, there would be dash cam evidence of that.
Oh, definitely,
you know?
Definitely.
But when definitely. They realized that I wrote for a magazine and that I was going to be kind of noisy, immediately they got rid of that. But I got some good audio recordings from the internal affairs people that I'm going to be using on this show later on. So I hope you tell your friends to tune in to freedomizerradio.com and start listening to some of the things that I we all do as we explore and analyze and expose, because the only way to get rid of the cockroaches is with light. Right?
Exactly.
Or raid.
Exactly.
Or raid.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so listen to what Alex Jones says about the NDAA. And this was even before he interviewed a friend. I consider him a friend. He might want to not consider me a friend, but his name is Stuart Rhodes. Stuart Rhodes is the founder of Oathkeepers.org, and he engages people who have been in the military, who have been even police officers, to join his group and solemnly swear that they will not disarm law-abiding citizens. And Stuart Rhodes has been a good friend, or has been interviewed by Alex Jones, the famous conspiracy theorist that now
okay.
is the all of the things that he has been saying are actually coming true. This is a 30-second comment of an interview of the National Defense Authorization Act.
And I know you've never talked like this on my show. I've probably interviewed you 20 times. I've seen hundreds of speeches you've given, and they provocateur. They want violence. We don't want it. But if they do start disappearing people and stuff, my God, we're just entering an area of the ball game where they want to force a confrontation. I mean, clearly, Stuart, you see, just like the arrogant redcoats, you know, did 230-something years ago, they're trying to push a confrontation right now.
Right. That was Alex Jones. And this is a little 18-second clip of Stuart Rhodes. And Stuart, just so that you know, he used to be an advisor for Ron Paul. He's a lawyer, Yale graduated attorney, and he has gotten awards for his constitutional type of history writings and historical things that he's done. You would never know that he is so credentialed just by meeting him, because I didn't even know he was a lawyer, and I remember being really flippant and saying, oh, I can't stand lawyers, yada, yada. He didn't even blink. And I just insulted his profession, you know. But
right.
And I've compared him to Jesus. What I envision Jesus must have been like, you know, where you see, you know, he draws children and animals towards him, and he speaks, and he doesn't have to speak in a loud way to be heard, and people are attracted and drawn to him. That's what Stuart Rhodes was. But in this interview, it's almost as though he's at a snapping point. So listen to what he said to Alex Jones in reference to the NDAA right before it was actually signed.
John McCain is a traitor. Every single one of them that votes for this, Lindsey Graham, are all traitors. They committed treason against you. And I don't use that term lightly, but they are declaring war and waging war on the American people. And so, as far as I'm concerned, if they pass this bill, it's put up or shut up time for the American people. Either you're going to fight another revolution, or you're going to be slaves.
And wow. He does make, yeah. So, what do you think of all this? I mean, knowing what you know.
Right. You know what? I believe all of what they're saying. I believe it. You know, we will no longer be free if we continue to not stand up and fight and do what we need to do. You know, I, like I said, I guess for me it's like sometimes I get frustrated because I am out there every week. I've been out there by myself. You know, and I tell people, don't wait until this happens to you. You know, if you don't get up there and do something, you know, it's happening all the time. It can happen to anybody at any time. Don't wait until it happens to you. Get out here. Come on, we need to really stand up. And like I said, say enough is enough. You're here to protect and serve. You're not here to execute and make us disappear. You right. know, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Well, as far as I'm concerned, it's not going to happen. You know, because I am a fighter. I am going to fight. And I am going to be, I want people to hear me. You know, I'm limited to some of the things I can say or do because
you're in the lawsuit.
Of my son's case. Mm-hmm. But I can still get out there. I can still have a petition. I can still do, I have a constitutional right to do the things that I'm doing. And I do them.
Right.
You know, you mm-hmm. have to fight legal with legal, so that's what I'm doing.
But one of the things
you
that,
have
that
stand up.
Right. One of the things that you know, I don't agree with the Occupy Wall Street message, which is basically that rich people are all evil. That's the basic message that I got. But I definitely agree that or support their right to protest. But the one good thing, in my opinion, that came out of this whole Occupy Wall Street thing was the actual footage and the coverage of the tyrannical behavior of some of the
mm-hmm.
police officers. But let me
and they
tell
were on
you,
their best
those,
behavior.
That's
and they were on their
exactly
best behavior.
Right. Because they knew they were being watched. What do you think happens when they're not being watched?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how they kill people and then lie about it to make and then have the media help them with their lives. I blame the media just as much as the cops and people, individuals. We need to
right.
wake up and critically think. I mean, just because you heard something on the television or you know a commercial or what have, do your homework. I mean,
exactly. I mean, we're all. You're all entitled to your opinion, okay? I can respect that. But don't speak on it if you don't know anything about it.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people do. You know, they're like, oh, well, like we said earlier, oh, well, he was an ex-parolee, so he deserved to die. Really?
Mm-hmm.
If one of your family members had been in prison and he came out, does he deserve to die just because he was an ex-parolee or an ex, you know, he had just gotten out of jail? No.
Right.
No.
As far as I'm concerned, if somebody did their time, they should be restored to all rights as a U.S. citizen. And
exactly.
And it's not that way. But when you think about it even more deeply, and I've you know, it's when I went into about a 1 to 2 year depression over this, I first heard it with George Carlin, and it just wasn't funny to me when he said, "You really don't have rights. Rights are a myth. They're fantasy. It's fiction, like the Easter Bunny, like the unicorn, like Santa Claus." And I didn't think that was very funny because I'm thinking people died for rights, you know. But then when
right.
I thought about it, and you know, I was pissed off at George Carlin for saying that, and after I started analyzing this and rethinking this whole rights versus privileges thing and the United States.
Absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, there was one person, and I know Phil is still listening, and it was somebody that was on his show that was saying, you know, I have rights, and I don't owe anybody anything. My house is paid for. My cars are paid for. And I just kind of had to chuckle to myself. I was thinking to myself, just try not paying your property taxes 1 year and see
right.
how free you are.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
let's see how far you can get in that car that you paid for and that you're paying the maintenance and the gasoline and taxes on everything. See how far you get if it's not registered to some state. Let's see how
exactly.
free you are. And in reality, in the United States, we do have more people in prison per capita than any other country in the entire planet.
And I know that.
And we're supposed to be the home of the land of the free and the brave, and home of the brave, or whatever that saying is.
Exactly.
It's just mind-boggling that people still are not waking up. And so I tell people it doesn't matter, you know, because I'll bash a Republican and they're like, oh, you're just a Mexican liberal Democrat, you know, and it's like, no, I was kind of raised that way, but then I married a right winger Republican who converted me, and then I started thinking for myself and became independent, and then I thought a little bit further, and then I became I'm a registered libertarian now. But even at that, I'm even thinking, can any small government ever be small?
Right.
It can ever stay small? No, it can't. Just by the very nature of it. Which is why I'm going to be having Bill Buepert on my show next week. And he is zerogov.com. He's got a lot of very interesting insight about rights, about our Constitution, about being liberty-minded and everything. And so we're down to 3 minutes, Teresa. Do you have any closing comments that you'd like to give to my audience?
The only thing I can say is I will be out there fighting every week. I will fight and I will fight and I will fight until somebody is held accountable for killing my son. I won't give up. I will not give up. And
now,
if anybody wants to join me, please come out here.
Thank you, Teresa. Thank you so much for being my special guest on this day. And
thank you for having me.
I will pray for you, and you know, my heart goes out to you and to your family. And keep doing what you're doing. If we shake up enough people, maybe we'll start waking up. And so I'll say goodnight to you. I'm going to leave the show with an open message to cops and military that I kind of stole off of the YouTube. Somebody, I'll put the link on my Facebook. TL Roar is my link. So facebook.com/TL Roar. So have a good night, Teresa, and thank
you. You too, and
everybody.
Thank you for having me.
Take care, girlfriend. And
all right, you too.
Everybody, you've been listening to FreedomizerRadio.com. This is Tiger Lily. I'm going to leave you with an open message to cops and military. And stay tuned for Druanna and her show coming up at the bottom of the hour.
This is an open message to police, to the military, to TSA, Homeland Security, and to members of every other enforcement arm of the government. I know that most of you chose the life in uniform because you love your country. Because you believed in what that uniform stood for, because you genuinely wanted to serve and protect. But I also know that deep down inside, you sense that something has gone terribly wrong. You've watched with the rest of us as elected officials have legislated our constitutional rights away piece by piece. You've watched as the state surveillance apparatus has expanded like a cancer through the heart of the nation. And you've seen the corruption that's become more blatant with every passing year. I can understand why you haven't wanted to acknowledge the implications of what you're witnessing. To face the reality of what's happening would mean admitting that you've been betrayed. And it would mean coming to terms with the fact that you are working for criminals. I don't envy your position. I know your job depends on following orders. I know you have families to support and bills to pay. And I know if you stand up, you could lose everything. But what you need to understand is that continuing to submit to unconstitutional and immoral orders will not protect you from what's coming. You may tell yourself that you can draw your line in the sand later, that there's a certain point where you'll say no. But in reality, you crossed the line a long time ago. You are standing on the wrong side of history right now. You are already participating in the destruction of this country and the trampling of our rights, of your children's rights, and your grandchildren's rights. You are the enforcement arm of a criminal enterprise. You are a servant of a rapidly expanding police state, and you do have a choice. I'm not telling you this to condemn you. I'm telling you this because we, the people, desperately need you to take a stand. We desperately need you to have the courage to face your commanding officers and tell them, no, I didn't sign up for this. No, this isn't right. No, I will not obey these unlawful orders. You took an oath to defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. It's time to start taking that oath seriously.
Why are you hurting these people?